My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, welcome everyone to 2013 with the EDP Formula One podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. We're here back at Arch and Towers, refreshed after our winter break, free of all the stresses and strifes of 2012, ready for a new season, expectations all over the place. There are no preconceptions. We are free to go, free to run down these tracks of motorsport. Anyone would have thought I was rusty. Joining me for this preview podcast, looking ahead to the 2013 season, I have Perry Hamilton. Hello, Perry.
Hello, Michael.
Great to have you in.
Great to be here. I actually haven't left since we did the last podcast. I've been here. I've
locked in the room.
Literally just sat down. They throw me some food every now and then. All I have done in the last few months is just think about Formula One.
You're like our stick, aren't you?
That's it. We just open
up the crate. You come out. And we put you back in the crate again.
Yeah, sometimes I'll bite. But most of the time, if you keep your hand open and flat, I won't take a finger off. You'll be fine. But it's good to be back, Michael.
It really is.
I'm very excited about the new Formula One season. And I'm ready to get at it.
It's going to be a cracker. You've already heard his voice. David Tillier is in here, the man behind iPiston. We can't just say Gridwalk anymore.
Gridwalk is well and truly done and dusted.
Give us the official. What am I supposed to introduce you as in future? Help me out.
I don't know. I think just me is fine. I think
just
know?
Me. Yeah. All right. Well, there's just me.
Just me.
He's here. Yeah. Just me. Off the old iPiston website.
Yes.
Google it.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll find some wonders. We're all sitting around a picture of David Hasselhoff, who has little to do with Formula One.
But he's going to buoy us on.
He is, indeed. That was much better than the tenuous German connection I was going to get to.
I wish you'd have told me we were going to talk about David Hasselhoff, because in my head, I'd have been ready. But now I'm not. So.
If only we could use the soundtrack on these podcasts.
If you're listening, find a picture of David Hasselhoff and look at it, and then that way we know that you're suffering with us.
Exactly. This is it. Suffering. Let's move on. Rusty as we are, let's get into the Formula One. We've had three tests. They started in February-ish, maybe the end of January, I think it was. I can't remember now. Anyway, Jerez, Barcelona, three tests. They've all had a go. They've sorted out their driver lineups finally. There's been good bits, bad bits. As much as we can read into testing, David, what are you thinking? How did you see it?
This is the first year testing wise I'm not getting excited about anything, and I'm doing it on purpose, because every year I kind of think, oh, they're doing really well, or they've done fantastically, or Lotus are going to win loads of races because they were fantastic last year, or you know, the usual things. But this year I'm going to be boring in a way and say that I don't know what's going to happen. I have some guesses, and we'll probably come to those later.
Yes, but, you have to give the guesses.
But as it stands at the moment, no, I think it's as usual. It's very hard to tell what's gone on, really.
Yeah, the usual suspects, I suppose. Red Bull almost deliberately trying not to look quick. Lotus can't help themselves in looking quick. And McLaren seemingly to have a very good car, but you're not quite sure if it's got everything it needs.
Got potential, from what I can see. They've obviously gone with something quite risky. They've, unlike everyone else who's just naturally progressed their car onwards, the McLaren have gone for something that's very, very new, and they're struggling to get to grips with it at the moment. But I reckon probably by sort of a quarter of the way through the season, you'll probably start seeing them actually really pulling in some pretty good lap times, I would have thought.
And of course, if Vettel taught us anything last year, it's that you can wait till 3/4 of the way through the season before making your full championship charge. So normally, when you know years gone past and you say McLaren aren't going to be really ready to go until a quarter of the way through the season, you think, well, you know, that's a redevelopment season, they're just going to kick the tyres, aha, pun intended, and then really, really challenge the year after. But the way the point system is set up, we've seen late drives and late challenges for the season come through. So yeah, I mean, if McLaren are going radically different and that pays off, then even if it's halfway through the season when it does pay off, you could be looking at title contenders very easily.
This is assuming, of course, that the first seven races are shared around and you don't have one person dominating from the off.
That's
which
true.
Would be... Let's get this straight. There haven't been a lot of rule changes over the winter. The cars are going to have a pretty... Apart from a modesty board to cover up those ugly step noses that only a few teams have actually decided to take up on, we're not really looking at any major changes in the cars. Does that mean that it's going to be the status quo straight off as to how we finished last year? Is it going to be tighter? And because originally I thought it would mean that Red Bull would be completely out of sight. The closer we get to the start of the season, yes, the air conditioning has just gone off. Isn't it lovely? The closer we get to the end of the to the start of the new season, the more I'm thinking that maybe things will be, the order will be all jumbled up. And
I think as it stands at the moment, because of the way that the rules have not changed, that everyone will bunch up. There won't be as big a gap as we had last year. So what you'll see is, because it is that much tighter, it will actually be more about who's behind the wheel rather than who's designing the car. Red Bull are probably still going to have the quickest car, I'd imagine. You know, I didn't want to get to predictions this quickly, but they probably will do, even though they've not shown their hand. Everyone is going to get that bit closer to each other, and therefore the racing's going to be very, very tight, and you could see another situation where you don't actually know from weekend to weekend who's going to be the outright victor.
Oh, let's hope so.
Well, I think that's the point. You say there's not that many rule changes. I think it's because we've finally got to a point now, or rather Bernie has got to a point now, where you can really market F1 as being a tight sport. You know, they finally reintroduced a level of parity back into the sport, which makes it thrilling for fans to watch. So you know, the idea is, towards the end of last season, Red Bull came storming through because we know full well that Sebastian Vettel performs better under pressure. You know, there was it was feasible he could win the championship. Therefore, he went out there and he drove the wheels off of it. And we saw a couple of races where he had no right to finish as high as he did, but he did it. If that pressure's not on, does he still drive as well? Who knows? I personally would say probably not. But because it is going to be so close, as you know, as Dave said, everyone's going to bunch up. You have that level where you don't know who's going to win, because the rules have made it so everyone's got a chance. Mostly everyone.
I've got a couple of questions here. I'll get some predictions out of you, maybe, David, or certainly some feelings. Is there a car that's impressed over testing, and then one that hasn't?
Well, I'd say a car that's impressed in terms of it's delivered more than I expect is definitely the Mercedes. Initially, at the start of testing, it seemed unreliable. That seemed to be some early sort of first few day jitters, but actually since then it's been pretty much rock solid. And I think they actually ended up with more laps overall than any other team, with something like probably in the region of about 1,200 laps done over.
Well,
testing.
Actually, I've got the numbers here, David, and you're almost right. Sauber did a few more, 3,297.
That's not what Sky Sports said on
Mercedes
Friday.
Mercedes 3,246. That is from Autosport. I don't know. Well, them and Sky can have an argument over, but certainly Sauber and Mercedes. It's the number of miles covered. There we go. But you'd have thought that would be similar. Anyway, carry on.
Fair enough. But they've looked quick, and Lewis seems to have settled in quite well. But Nico looks quick as well. But you don't know how much showboating there is going on there. Lotus again look very, very quick, but again you don't know how much showboating is going on there. And reliability seems to be a bit of an issue for them. Red Bull haven't impressed, but they clearly have a fairly solid car, and it's not that much different to last year, so it's going to be pretty good. But I'd say probably the most improved is probably Ferrari, I'd say, especially compared to this time last year.
Yeah, it does look like a nice car. It's probably one of my favourite looking cars as well. It was interesting when Mercedes came out and were having a few troubles, you sort of felt yourself sort of smiling at what Lewis Hamilton was going to have to deal with this season, and then you see that they've got it together and you're almost debating in your head whether you want it all to work out for him or not. I think Lotus are going to be quick in the opening races. I also think Red Bull will. What do you reckon, Ped?
Dave jumped in there very nicely. When you say who's impressed, personally, I think Ferrari, especially Massa. We could say this time last year, we all were putting the nails in Massa's Ferrari career, in the coffin in his Ferrari career, for sure. But we quickly found out that he's quite committed to the team. The team recommitted to him, and he drove through that really, really well. He's continued that form in the off-season. He's driven incredibly well in testing. He's got some really good mileage out of the car. He's got some really good times out of the car. We all know test pace is not race pace. We all know that. Even qualifying pace isn't race pace. But when they've got a team behind the wheel as good as Alonso and Massa, they both seem to be able to make up for any slight deficiencies in the car. This year, Ferrari seemed to have less deficiencies than last year, which would put them on track for a good start.
Indeed. Most to prove, I'm not sure about that, but who's going to have a tough season, gents? I have to admit that probably very close to home, Caterham are going to have a very tough year.
Well, I would say most disappointing thing out of all of testing is Caterham. Their car is pretty much exactly the same as last year's car, with a few little changes and a slightly different paint job.
It's really green.
It's got less yellow on it as well, so they're kind of moving away from the Lotus colours, which for me personally is slightly nice to see, for them to sort of forging their own identity rather than sort of hanging on to one that they used to have. But the car isn't that much different, but they say they're going to bring a new car later in the season, which is fair enough. They had to settle into the new factory, fair enough. They've had a bit of a change at the top and their management's changed, fair enough. But it is disappointing to see that they're going to be probably the slowest team now. I mean, they can't rely on HRT being there to make them look good. and the other thing that's disappointing me is the fact they signed Gaeta Vandergaard. Because, okay, fair enough, if you're not going to bring Heike back, then at least bring in some young, fresh, exciting talent, not someone who's, you know, been around the block a bit and is not, doesn't look like one of the drivers that's going to sort of light us on fire, as it were.
No, it's been, Caterham have had a trouble in recent years of not living up to their own expectations. I don't think there's much chance of them having that kind of issue this year.
And this is a worry for Caterham. It really is, because Formula One is a sport that costs a huge amount of money to invest in, and you need to start seeing returns on those investments in year three, year four. Caterham are not seeing the returns, or not even becoming close to seeing the returns that we need. I mean, you know, Red Bull are a championship winning team now, but we go back 5 years, you know, where were Red Bull? They weren't winning championships. But you know, the improvement was there. Admittedly, there was an evolution in that team and the way it'd been taken over a number of times. Caterham need to perform. This is the worry, is that they actually are sitting at a place where they need to perform. They need to show that they're worthy of the investment. They need to attract newer, younger, exciting drivers, as DT's saying that they're not. They're not going to do that from the back of the grid, unfortunately. And this year, I especially think that Marussia are poised to make a huge jump ahead of them, not just with the development of their car, but with the talent they've signed as well to put behind the wheel of it.
Indeed. Is it Max Chilton and Lewis? No, it's Jules Bianchi.
Jules Bianchi.
Which is a terrific, terrific signing. We should talk about the other team who we like to claim a Norfolk connection with. Lotus, we've touched on them and how well testing has gone for them. Romain Grosjean and, of course, Kimi Raikkonen. The car seems to be more settled. There's a few issues that they had last year that they seem to have ironed out early on. They should have their passive DRS system working nicely, hopefully, from the off. That's the idea, anyway.
That's unlikely.
whilst a few maybe teams are trying to sort themselves out, like McLaren and maybe Ferrari, it's a real opportunity for Lotus, eh?
If they can keep the car in one piece, if they can keep it together, because the car does seem fragile. But then I suppose it wouldn't be a Lotus if it wasn't slightly fragile. So, you know, they were famed for being
That's
quick. But
Colin Chapman's legacy. Yeah.
Indeed. They could capitalise. And obviously they've got Kimi there. Kimi's more than capable of capitalising on any eventuality that may crop up. I have a feeling that Roman might be fast again this year, whether or not we'll see him being a little bit more consistent with his ability to get around the first lap will remain to be seen.
He was very consistent with his ability to get around the first lap last year. It was ability he didn't have.
You see, now he'd be my man to watch, Roman. Well, I think he's going to have a hell of a season.
You mentioned earlier, you know, most to prove, and I think Roman Grosjean is in the top three of that category for me. He, you know, the team's shown commitment to him. They brought him back, and every time that you asked anyone at Lotus about his status, it was always unending support, unwavering, real, you know, good base for him to learn from. I don't think he's going to learn a huge amount from Kimi, and I think that may stunt his development ever so slightly. If he had a teammate who was willing to spend a little bit of extra time with the younger drivers and was just a bit more personable, then you could see him develop quicker. But Kimi tends to keep to Kimi, we know that, but that's how he drives, you know, he knows what he's doing. Don't try and tell him what to do. We know that from last year as well. So I think it's not going to be a huge problem to Grosjean because he's been around the block, he knows what he's doing. But I just think that if there was that little bit of, I don't know, slightly less Iceman and slightly more Nice Man, I think you could see a bit more of a jump from Grosjean. But I think he's going to be very quick this year, but I think he's going to have to be.
I just think Roman's got it in him. I think whereas some you can question whether they have, he's one of the ones who definitely has got that.
I think he's definitely got the speed, but I wouldn't have signed him.
No,
I wouldn't have re-signed him.
Who would you have been?
If you say Charles Peake, I swear, I'll let this record.
We'll get to see him fly in a Caterham this year, DT. Yeah. So,
it's difficult because part of me would have thought having Bruno Senna back would probably be quite good. Because I think Senna's underrated. I think he's quite a good, solid driver, and he's quite reliable and consistent. I think he would bring home points where, you know, he wouldn't be a number one driver, but he would be a good number two. It's hard to say because there's all the other drivers that were floating around were sort of floating around other teams, so you kind of have to wonder what they had on there. But then again, they've got such a big reserve driver list, they've got loads of people to choose from. You know, they could probably have half the team go off sick and still replace it.
Worst comes to worst, they can call me up and I'll go down.
And Kimi did go off sick recently, didn't he? He got food poisoning.
Well, this is true. Indeed, he did. Get better soon, Kimi. I think he's better now, isn't he? He'll be all right. All right, then. Well, just a quick update then. Red Bull, of course, will have Sebastian Vettel, Mark Webber, going for their fourth consecutive constructors and drivers title. Is that right?
I think that's right. It took me a while to work out at the end of the year when they kept talking about the triple double. I was like, oh yeah, and then it sort of finally dawned on me when I realised what they meant. A bit of a blonde moment for me there.
Domination. The RB9 looks reasonably nice. Ferrari, as we've said, Fernando Alonso and Felipe Massa. We then have McLaren, Jenson Button, who will be the absolutely number one alongside Sergio Perez. You've just fist pumped, DT. Is Perez your man to?
No, Jensen.
Jensen all the way.
I'd like to think he's do okay. If he's not going to win the world championship this year, he's probably never going to win the world championship again, which is probably fair to say.
Oh, there's an ultimatum thrown down at Jensen's door.
Checo.
Yeah, again, one of those younger drivers that has to show that McLaren's made the right choice. McLaren are very shrewd in the drivers that they bring in. They've had a couple of explosive bust-ups in the past and some quite glaringly bad choices. But what McLaren have shown us is if it is quite obviously a bad choice, they're not afraid to cut their ties after just a year. They're not the kind of thing to keep banging on and banging on and banging on about, you know, going throwing good after bad. So in that respect, he needs to get on it, but we know Perez is quick, and the good thing is we know he can look after his tyres as well. And you put him in a front running car and give him an extra 5-6 laps per run against everyone else, you know, we could be bringing home some serious podiums if not winning races.
It's going to be fascinating how he does, because I think he veered from silly mistakes to ridiculous drives last year. So.
Well, Martin Whitmarsh actually came out and said we would be doing something wrong and we would be failing in our ability if we did not give Checo, as he calls him, I think Chico sounds better, but Checo.
Did I say Chico?
I don't know.
I did say Chico, didn't I? Oh, thank God. Yeah.
But if they didn't give him at least one win by the end of the 2013 season, they would have done something wrong, and they think it should actually be multiples of.
Mercedes, the car always looks good, I think. There are all sorts of battles and wrangles going on behind the scenes there with Ross Brawn and all the other people. Nico Rosberg, Lewis Hamilton. Nico's got a proper teammate to compare himself with. How Lewis going to get on?
I think quite well. They're good. They get on really well. They're good friends. They used to be teammates back in karting days, so they know each other. Lewis was in said in an interview the other day. He knows Rosberg's ways. He knows how, you know, Rosberg likes to wind him up and all this sort of stuff, and he knows how to deal with him. But in a good way, they get on really well. They're neighbours. I think they live not far from each other. So I think they'll get on really, really well. It's whether or not Rosberg can keep up with Hamilton.
Quite.
Because not many people can keep up with Hamilton, so you know, it's going to be difficult.
I think it'll raise his game, though, trying to. Rosberg is the kind of guy who is quietly competitive. He's not going to scream and shout from the rooftops. He's not going to, you know, make a big play out of it that he's, you know, I'm not going to call him out publicly in the press or anything like that. But, you know, Rosberg feels he has something to prove. He went to a championship-winning team and has won one race in the time that he's been there, and even doing that, he has still always been in the shadow of his teammate, despite his teammate's consistently poor performances. I mean, that's not the legacy that Michael Schumacher's going to be remembered for. He's going to be remembered for all of his championships and his years at Ferrari, but for those of us who actually watched him racing the last couple of years, I think it's fair to say we're glad that he's moved out of the way and has left space for some of the younger, more exciting drivers to come in at other teams by taking other drivers from other top flight teams. So to have someone else to compare yourself to, someone who is, you know, younger and has more expected of them in Lewis Hamilton, and who probably at this point in his career comparatively would expect more from himself, I think it's only going to push Rosberg, because he is that kind of guy that wants to perform, and he's not going to want to get embarrassed, is really what you're going to look at there.
More pressure, maybe the better he performs. I'd be interested to see if they actually win a race this year. They obviously won one last year. Let's go through some of the midfield teams, shall we? Sauber will have Nico Hülkenberg and Esteban Gutierrez behind the wheel. Nico,
exciting lineup.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Nico does there. Beautiful slate grey car they've got this year as well.
You see these tiny side pods?
It's all the rage.
They're fantastic.
Tiny side pods. Yeah. Toro Rosso, which is actually my favourite car. I think it looks beautiful. They will stick with their teenagers of Jean-Éric Vergne and Daniel Ricciardo.
And rightly so.
First time that we've seen a changeless off-season from them, isn't it, for a while? I mean,
it started with
Bourdais and Buemi and Alguershuari, and then you've had all kinds of people coming. So this is actually a really good base for them to go into
their second year before they then ditch them.
Yeah, Buemi and Alguershuari had a couple of years each.
They did,
yeah. Before they ousted them.
It just kind of seems to me now like Toro Rosso have got a good foot in the door. They've got stability, and their drivers have got stability in their team, and they could be poised to make that jump that, you know, you expect of those midfield teams to start pushing into the third qualifying session and start getting fourth places and maybe even a podium here on there.
Force India, one of the last to announce their completed driver lineup. The car doesn't look too bad. Maybe a better start than they had last year. Paul de Resta, who I think admits himself he was glad last year ended in the end. It was probably a difficult second season for him. Was it second season, wasn't it? I've got that right. And he'll be lining up alongside Adrian Sutil.
Which I think
crazy comeback.
I don't know. I don't know. Sutil's quite a good driver. I think it'd be interesting to see how he comes back after a year out. But
and how he's received given the circumstances of
I think. I don't know, it was a difficult one because Jules Bianchi, very, very exciting, very, very quick driver, backing from Ferrari. But I think the ultimate thing was, I think Force India want to continue their relationship with Mercedes. And there is something with Sutil in that, with him being German, and there's something going on in the background there, I think, which is pushing them towards Sutil from an engine perspective. But it'd be interesting to see what they do. It's nice to see De Resta with a teammate, though. He did look very, very lonely at Silverstone.
Yeah,
sat there all on his own with all the press around him, just sat on the car on his own, no one else.
Bless. No HRT this year. They have gone by the wayside. Cheerio, we won't be seeing them again. Which only leaves Marussia, who I think will make strides this year. They have Max Chilton, the latest British driver on the Formula One grid, and he will be alongside Jules Bianchi, who I think, as we've suggested, is quick, exciting, and poor old Luis Razia, who had all been unveiled and everything, was swiftly dumped because I think something with this sponsor didn't quite come around. So former Caterham racer Lewis will have to bide his time. It's a shame. Nice bloke. Mm. Never mind. Right, that is the grid. As it will stand, as it will start in Australia. We will touch in Australia later. But, gents, just before we go, can I have a tip for the title? Tip for the constructor's title, first of all. David.
Right, tip for the title. Alonso.
Drat and bother, there was my shout as well. I was going to go Alonso.
Really?
I really was, yeah.
So was I.
Well, okay, so Alonso
Honest.
Trifecta.
I think this might be the year Ferrari do just get it right.
He showed that he can nearly win a world championship with a car that's quite a lot slower than the one that did win the world championship, and he only missed out by a handful of points. So if he can do that with a car that is more on par with the Red Bull or the car that's fastest, then he stands a good chance. If he has a car that is the fastest, then, you know, then it could be very interesting for Alonso fans.
And you'd have to say, if Felipe Massa repeats over the whole of next season what he did in the second half of last year, they should be shoo-ins for the Constructors' Championship too.
Yeah.
We're tipping a Ferrari renaissance here, gentlemen.
We could be.
Love it.
Genuinely what I was going to say before Dave jumped in there.
Love it. Well, there we go. That was the joy of coming first there with the tip. How about a tip to struggle then, Ped?
Tip to struggle. Oh.
And you can have a dark horse as well.
See, my worry on tip to struggle is that it makes the assumption that, do you pick a top flight team? Do you pick one of the top five teams and say they're going to struggle? Or do you pick a team lower down the field that we wouldn't be surprised if they struggled anyway? I mean, we've already touched on how we think Caterham are going to struggle and how difficult we think they are going to find it. I don't know. Who's going to struggle? It's a difficult one. It's easy to say someone like Lewis Hamilton, you know, because he's going to a new team, but Lewis can drive the wheels off it no matter what it is. We know that. I'm going to leave it with Caterham. I really think Caterham are going to have a very difficult year this year, and I think that they are going to struggle. My dark horse for a championship or just to have a very surprisingly
good season.
I think it's going to be the Saubers. I think the Saubers are going to really, really come back roaring. You know, as you touched on it, they look great. They had some really good developments technically. They've got a nice, good young driver lineup. We've seen what Hulkenberg can do. So going forward, I expect to see some really strong Sauber performances.
I think one of the Toro Rossos are going to step it up this year. I think maybe Ricciardo will shine. Yeah. Struggle wise, I think Perez may well win a race. Mm. I just think around about that he will struggle. I've realised I've missed a team out, which is always the danger.
But you don't need to worry because I'm going to come,
to, going
them
to, come to them.
I am going to come
now.
To them in
well,
just a
I
moment.
I can understand why you missed them out because they weren't doing anything new for a long time.
And they unveiled their car very late. The only thing is they do have a very, very quick rookie.
Well, Williams are my dark horse for this year.
Ooh.
They have the Bottas.
It's almost like I scripted.
The Bottas.
The Bottas.
Arteri.
They have the Bottas, so I have a feeling he might be pretty quick. Maldonado's shown that he can be quick. Just need to see if he can actually
afford it.
Well, afford it, but bring that speed into a more consistent race pace. So it'll be interesting to see what that comes up with. But they have, for me, probably the most exciting car of all the cars released in 2013. They have very interesting front nose on that, very interesting front wing. They have a really exciting rear sort of packaging in terms of where they've packaged the gearbox. And if you look at the side profile of the car, because of where the rules work out, a lot of the cars have these little fins on the back of the thing because the engine cover has to come out a certain distance past the back of the engine. If you were to actually cut that off and someone's done a Photoshop of it, like you get just past the roll hoop and then there's just nothing on the Williams because they're so tightly packaged and they've got a really interesting gearbox. So I reckon that there's some good pace in that Williams.
I love it.
And I reckon it'd be quite exciting to watch.
Okay, we'll take that one.
Winning race pace?
Mm.
Ooh.
Not championship winning race pace.
But race winning.
Yeah, I mean, we saw last year that Williams can win races, and I reckon this new car is a step above what they had last year. And I think it's better than the Force India. I think it's better than the Sauber, despite the fact that I think the Sauber looks fantastic. The Sauber's been sort of plagued by issues. And the Toro Rosso isn't really that much different to last year. And because of that, they're not going to make that much of a step up. The only difference they will make is the fact that it should be easier to set the car up. And hopefully they can do slightly better in qualifying, but we'll see.
Qualifying will be quite interesting. I think there's all sorts of doomsday scenarios with qualifying, and the Q3 will basically be a write-off because everyone will be playing for their tyre setup, which will make for unusual grids and fantastic racing, which I think is a direct quote. We shall have to see. Gentlemen, there, we're going to leave it for part one, and we're going to come back with our second part, which will be looking ahead to the Australian Grand Prix, where it all kicks off. So, for now, David Pett, thank you very much. And we will be back momentarily. Bye for now.